Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Krishna vancha purati rupa kare aradhane ata eva radhika nama purane vakane. Krishna vancha purti rupa kare aradhane.
Krishna vancha purti rupa kare aradhane.
Ata eva radhika nama purane vakane.
Ata eva radhika nama purane vakane.
Krishna vancha purti rupa kare aradhane. Ata eva radhika nama purane vakane.
Ata eva radhika nam purane.
Krishna vancha purti rupa kare aradhane.
Krishna vancha purti rupa kare aradhane.
Ata eva radhika nam purane vakane.
Ata eva radhika nam purane vakane.
Krishna vancha,
Krishna vancha
of the desire of Lord Krishna. Purti rupa of the nature of fulfillment. Kare does. Aradhane worship. Ata eva therefore. Radhika Srimati Radhika. Nama, named. Purane, in the Puranas. Vakane, in the description. Four kinds of devotees are the receptacles of the four kinds of mellows and love of God, namely servitude, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. Each kind of devotee feels that his sentiment is the most excellent, and thus in that mood he tastes great happiness with Lord Krishna. But if we compare the sentiments in an impartial mood, we find that the conjugal sentiment is superior to all in sweetness. Increasing love is experienced in various tastes, one above another, but that love which has the highest taste in the gradual succession of desire manifests itself in the form of conjugal love. Therefore I call it Madhur Rasa. It has two further divisions, namely wedded and unwedded love. There's a great increase of mellow in the unwedded conjugal mood. Such love is found nowhere but in Vraja. This mood is unbounded in the damsels of Vraja, but amongst them it finds its perfection in Sri Radha. Lord Chaitanya is the shelter of the demigods. Did I go right? Here we go. Her pure, mature love surpasses that of all others. Her love is the cause of Lord Krishna's tasting the sweetness of conjugal relationship. Therefore, Lord Gauranga, who is Sri Hari himself, accepted the sentiments of Radha and thus fulfilled his own desires. Lord Chaitanya is the shelter of the demigods, the goal of the Upanishads, the be-all and end-all of the great sages, the beautiful shelter of his devotees, and the essence of love for the lotus-eyed gopis. Will he again be the object of my vision? Lord Krishna desired to taste the limitless nectarine mellows of the love of one of his multitude of loving damsels, Sri Radha. And so he assumed the form of Lord Chaitanya. He has tasted that love while hiding his own dark complexion with her effulgent yellow color. May that Lord Chaitanya confer upon us his grace. To accept ecstatic love is the main reason he appeared and re-established the religious system for this age. I shall now explain that reason. Everyone, please listen. Having first given hints about the verse describing the principal reason why the Lord appeared, now I shall manifest its full meaning. The loving affairs of Sri Radha and Krishna are transcendental manifestations of the Lord's internal pleasure-giving potency. Although Radha and Krishna are one in their identity, they separate themselves eternally. Now these two transcendental identities have again united in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. I bow down to him who has manifested himself with the sentiment and complexion of Srimati Radharani, although he is Krishna himself. Radha and Krishna are one and the same, but they have assumed two bodies. Thus they enjoy each other, tasting the mellows of love. Now to enjoy rasa, they have appeared in one body as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, I shall first delineate the position of Radha and Krishna. From that, the glory of Lord Chaitanya will be known. Srimati Radhika is the transformation of Krishna's love. She is his internal energy called Hladini. Lord Krishna's body is eternal, sat, full of knowledge, chit, and full of bliss, ananda. His one spiritual energy manifests three forms. Hladini in his aspect of bliss, Sandini of eternal existence, and Samvit of cognizance, which is also accepted as knowledge. O Lord, you are the support of everything. The three attributes, Hladini, Sandini, and Samvit, exist in you as one spiritual energy. But the material modes which cause happiness, misery, and mixtures of the two do not exist in you, for you have no material qualities. The essential portion of the Sandini potency is Shuddha-sattva. Lord Krishna's existence rests upon it. Krishna's mother, father, abode, house, bedding, seats, and so on are all transformations of Shuddha-sattva. The condition of pure goodness, Shuddha-sattva, in which the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears uncovered, is called Vasudeva. In that pure state, the Supreme Godhead, who is beyond the material senses, and who is known as Vasudeva, is perceived in my mind. The essence of the Samvit potency is knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Lord Krishna. All other kinds of knowledge, such as the knowledge of Brahman, are its components. The essence of the Hladini potency is love of God. The essence of love of God is emotion, bhava, and the ultimate development of motion is mahabhava. Sri Radha Thakurani is the embodiment of Mahabhav. She is the repository of all good qualities and the crest jewel amongst all the lovely consorts of Lord Krishna. Purport. The unadulterated action of the Hladini Shakti is displayed in the dealings of the damsels of Braja and Srimati Radharani, who is the topmost participant in that transcendental group. The essence of the Hladini Shakti is love of Godhead. The essence of love of Godhead is bhava, or transcendental sentiment, and the highest pitch of that bhava is called mahabhava. Srimati Radharani is the personified embodiment of these three aspects of transcendental consciousness. She is therefore the highest principle in love of Godhead, and is the supreme lovable object of Sri Krishna. Text 70. Of these two gopis, Radharani and Chandravali, Srimati Radharani is superior in all respects. She is the embodiment of Mahabhav, and she surpasses all in good qualities. Her mind, senses, and body are steeped in love for Krishna. She is Krishna's own energy, and she helps him in his pastimes. Purport. Srimati Radharani is fully spiritual as Krishna. No one should consider her to be material. She is definitely not like the conditioned souls who have mental bodies, gross and subtle, covered by material senses. She is all spiritual, and both her body and mind are of the same spiritual embodiment. Because her body is spiritual, her senses are also spiritual. Thus her body, mind, and senses fully shine in love of Krishna. She is the personified Hladini Shakti, the pleasure-giving energy of the Lord's internal potency, and therefore she is the only source of enjoyment for Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna cannot enjoy anything that is internally different from him. Therefore, Radha and Krishna are identical. The Sandini portion of Sri Krishna's internal potency has manifested the all-attractive form of Sri Krishna. And the same internal potency in the Hladini feature has presented Srimati Radharani, who is the attraction for the all-attractive. No one can match Srimati Radharani in the transcendental pastimes of Sri Krishna. Text 72. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who resides in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, who resembles his own spiritual figure and who embodies the ecstatic potency, Hladini. Their companions are her confidants, who embody extensions of her bodily form, and who are imbued and permeated with ever-blissful spiritual rasa. Now please listen to how Lord Krishna's consorts help him taste rasa and how they help in his pastimes. The beloved consorts of Lord Krishna are of three kinds, the goddesses of fortune, the queens, and the milkmaids of Braja, who are the foremost of all. These consorts all proceed from Radhika. Just as in the fountainhead, Lord Krishna is the cause of all. Just as the fountainhead, Lord Krishna is the cause of all incarnations, so Sri Radha is the cause of all these consorts. The goddesses of fortune are partial manifestations of Srimati Radhika, and the queens are reflections of her image. The goddesses of fortune are her plenary portions, and they display the forms of Vaibhav Vilas. The queens are of the nature of her Vaibhav Prakash. The Vraja Devis are diverse bodily features. Oh, the Vraja Devis have diverse bodily features. They are her expansions and are the instruments for expanding rasa. Without many consorts, there is not such exaltation in rasa. Therefore, there are many manifestations of Srimati Radharani to assist in the Lord's pastimes. Among them are various groups of consorts in Braja who have varieties of sentiments and mellows. They help Lord Krishna taste all the sweetness of the rasa dance and other pastimes. Purport. As already explained, Krishna and Radha are one in two. They are identical. Krishna expands himself in multi-incarnations and plenary portions like the Purushas. Similarly, Srimati Radharani expands herself in multi-forms as the goddesses of fortune, the queens and the damsels of Braja. Such expansions from Srimati Radharani are all her plenary portions. All these womanly forms of Krishna are expansions corresponding to his plenary expansions of Vishnu forms. These expansions have been compared to reflected forms of the original form. There's no difference between the original and of reflected forms. The female reflections of Krishna's pleasure potency are as good as Krishna himself. The plenary expansions of Krishna's personality are called Vaibhav Vilas and Vaibhav Prakash, and Radha's expansions are similarly described. The goddesses of fortune are Vaibhav Vilas, and the queens are Vaibhav Prakash of Radharani. The personal associates of Radharani, the damsels of Braja, are direct expansions of her body. As expansions of her personal form and transcendental disposition, they are agents of different reciprocations of love in the pastimes of Lord Krishna, under the supreme direction of Srimati Radharani. In the transcendental realm, enjoyment is fully relished in variety. The exuberance of transcendental mellow is increased by the association of a large number of personalities similar to Radharani, who are also known as gopis or shakis. The variety of innumerable mistresses is the source of relish for Sri Krishna, and therefore these expansions from Srimati Radharani are necessary for enhancing the pleasure potency of Sri Krishna. The transcendental exchanges of love are the super excellent affairs of the pastimes in Vrindavan. By these expansions of Srimati Radharani's personal body, she helps Lord Krishna taste the rasa dance and similar other activities. Srimati Radharani, being the central petal of the rasa lila flower, is also known by the names found in the following verses. Radha is the one who gives pleasure to Krishna. This is Govindanandini Radha Govinda Mohini Govinda Sarvasva Sarvakanta Shiromani. Radha is the one who gives pleasure to Govinda. She is also the enchantress of Govinda. She is the be-all and end-all of Govinda and the crest jewel of all his consorts. The transcendental goddess's Srimati Radharani is the direct counterpart of Lord Krishna. She is the central figure for all the goddesses of fortune. She possesses all the attractiveness to attract the all-attractive personality of Godhead. She is the primeval internal potency of the Lord. Devi means resplendent and most beautiful, or else it means the lovely abode of the worship and love sports of Lord Krishna. Krishnamayi means one who's within and without our Lord Krishna. She sees Lord Krishna everywhere. She casts her glance. Or she is identical with Lord Krishna, for she embodies the mellows of love. The energy of Lord Krishna is identical with him. Purport. Krishnamayi has two different imports. First, the person who always thinks of Krishna, both within and without, and who always remembers only Krishna. Wherever he goes or whatever he sees is called Krishnamayi. Also, since Krishna's personality is full of love, his loving potency, Radharani, being non-different from him, is called Krishnamayi. Her worship, Aradhana, consists of fulfilling the desires of Lord Krishna. Therefore, the Puranas call her Radhika. Purport. The name Radhika is derived from the root word Aradhana, which means worship. The personality who excels in all in worshipping Krishna may therefore be called Radhika, the greatest servitor. So this is Chaitanya Charitamrita, chapter 4, Adi Lila. So Lord Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, he is describing here then the nature of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So to understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you cannot understand it unless you understand Radhan Krishna. And then in this case here, specifically Radharani, because he has come to taste this flavor. Understanding these three for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, there is no difference. You cannot understand one without the other. Otherwise, you're not in our line. That's Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami makes the point that those who worship Krishna ignoring Lord Chaitanya, then they're demons. Or Lord Chaitanya without Krishna. They're this demoniac mentality. So one may say, but others, in other sampradayas, they worship Krishna without Lord Chaitanya. So then the point is they should be at least respecting Lord Chaitanya as the Yuga avatar. But in any case, this is, they're worshipping a Vaikuntha form of Krishna. So it's different. But here, to know Braja Krishna and Braja Radha, you cannot know them without knowing Lord Chaitanya and vice versa. There's no chance. So here then he's pointing out then to understand all this, first we have to understand Krishna's and Radharani's position. That the Lord, he is Satchit Ananda, eternity, knowledge and bliss, or cognizance. He says it's also known as knowledge. In this world it's known as knowledge, or on the Vaikuntha platform it's known as knowledge. But in Vrindavan it's known as cognizance. That one is aware, or one is always thinking of Krishna. Knowledge is not the element. In Vaikuntha, then knowledge is an important aspect of the Samvit potency. So that they know he's God, and they know all the great qualities of God. But in Braja, then it goes to the next level, where it's simply they appreciate Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes. So it's they are aware at every moment, at all times. Right? Therefore the name Krishna Mayi. They, within themselves, outside themselves, consciously, unconsciously, to others, to themselves, they are always remembering Krishna. And the other definition is everything they see in connection to Krishna. So that's the Brajavasis. They are Krishna Mayi. So, then the Krishna, all these potencies are there. So everything is based on this Sandini potency. That is the foundation of existence. So the transcendental existence, the Vishuddha Sattva, then is there, and they are known by these qualities. Then we see that the Lord then expands his potency. Because by expanding, then rasa can be tasted. If there's one, there's no rasa. You have one rasgula, there's no rasa. You have to have a tongue, then there is rasa. Right? Or you have a fabulous painting, but there are no eyes to look at it, there's no rasa. Right? It doesn't matter what it is, you can have one, there's no rasa. Right? That's impersonalism means one is not considering others. Right, we'll say if somebody doesn't behave nicely or is ignoring, we'll say they're impersonal because they're not acknowledging others, so there's no rasa. Right? So therefore, in expanding, then this rasa can expand, can be tasted. Though the Lord, being the complete whole, he in himself can taste. But when he expands, then that taste is increased. So then, in these rasas, then it's pointed out that the mellows, then we see in Braja, then Srimati Radharani, so Krishna, then all his pastimes are based on the Sandini potency. And Radharani is then the manifestation of the Hladini potency. So then she is able to create that happiness for Krishna. They are able to create that niceness for Krishna. So then by that niceness, then they are able to be happy. So by that happiness, then he expands his pastimes. Means why would you expand if it's not going to create more happiness? Right? Means why does somebody work hard, get more money, try to accumulate more facilities? Right? Because your facilities is then your foundation, your existence. Right? You expand that because you want to be more happy. And then because of the variety, then you're more happy. Right? If every day you eat the same thing, it's nice. But if it's variety, it expands the happiness. Right? If you have many different varieties of clothes or other articles, it expands the happiness. Right? So these principles have all come from the Lord. Right? That's where they have their origin. They're not separate from the Lord. Is the Lord's happiness is then expanded by that variety. Now, it's not because here we get bored of something, right? Here variety is there because each thing doesn't actually give the taste that it attributes to it, right? We say, okay, the mango is sweet, okay? So then, but the mango and the sweetness are two different things. Right? Mango, it's that particular shape, like that. We attribute to it that particular flavor. But the flavor is happening, particular sensation happening on the tongue. Right? So that would be chemically coming from what we call the mango. Now, us perceiving that as sweet is something else. Right? Means a kid would call it something else. You know? You know, if you didn't teach them language, they would come up with some idea. They know what is sweet, what is sour, what is salty. But it's called sweet because everybody agrees that this particular chemical reaction on the tongue, how it translates in the mind, that's called sweet. Does that make sense? In other words, our perception of it is something different than what it is. Because dead matter touching dead matter, there's no rasa. Right? You know, the kartal is touching the table. There's not a lot of rasa going on there. Right? There's not something happening there. Because it doesn't matter what dead matter touches what dead matter. It just doesn't matter. Right? It makes no difference to the wall whether you, you know, touch it with your finger or with a wire brush or throw mud on it or take a sledgehammer and hit it. It couldn't care less. Right? Because it's not conscious. So, therefore, then one could say, no, it's the taste is the mango. No, it's something separate. That the chemicals are touching. The tongue is dead matter. The mango is dead matter. They touch. They don't care. But we perceive, translate that this is called sweet. So then we say, this is nice or not nice. Right? Someone who likes, they say it's nice. Someone who doesn't like will say it's not. So it's two different things. So because of that, we need constant variety, otherwise we get bored. Because since it's dead matter contacting dead matter, it can't give us any satisfaction. That's the difficulty. It doesn't give us any happiness. Right? So then, but we have this idea that it will give us happiness. It should give us something. So then we try this combinations, right? Different combinations. Then we get something out of it. Then we move to the next one. We get something out of that. We move to the next one. And then it's nice. Otherwise, we would find it boring because it is boring, right? There's nothing there. So any happiness we get from any activity is what we project onto it, right? The activity itself doesn't give any happiness. Right? It's we projected that if I do this activity, it'll make me happy. Right? Like somebody is thinking, yes, you know, go out for a nice walk in the, you know, cool morning, brisk, you know, crisp, you know, air and this and that. And they're thinking this is nice, you know, filling their lungs again and again with this, you know, fresh air. And somebody else is, you know, closing the windows and bundling up and going, oh, it's so cold. Like that. So, it's simply, we decide that this is good or not. That's all. It's that simple. Right? That's why fashion changes, everything changes. You know, before it was a monster hat. That was considered really good. You know, it couldn't be, it shouldn't be straight either. It's got to have some flair to it. You put a few feathers in it, you know, you wear a few tights, you know, like that. You put some bows on your shoes. And that's considered good, you know. Later on, that's considered not so good. They want a straight hat with a straight brim. They want, you know, it just keeps changing. So, but it doesn't matter, right? To you know, the bugs, they'll eat either of them. They couldn't care less. They don't care what shape the hat is. You know, both of them are tasty, right? You know, so it doesn't matter. So we attribute that this is good or not good. That's all. So it doesn't. That's the thing, is that because we've been here so long, we just take it for granted this place is real and it has some significance, some meaning, some substance, but it actually doesn't. That's the thing. We attribute that it does. Because as cognizant living entities who have an eternal position and natural position of happiness, we have to, right? If we come to the grips with the reality, this place is a dump and there's no happiness here, and it's temporary and it's full of ignorance, then it has nothing to do with us. Then what are we going to do? Right? Then it'll be really freaky. You know, then you're in like solitary confinement. You know, there's nothing to do, no one to talk, nothing's happening. So only the devotees can actually handle this fact. Right? The non-devotees, when they realize this, they go strange. You know, the existentialists, this and that. They just go loopy. They try to kill themselves, this, that. If it doesn't mean anything, so what's the significance of killing yourself? Why has that got substance? Right? Nothing has substance, so we should just kill ourselves. That also doesn't have any substance. So that means the whole basis, there is no basis for anything. So then their identity, their intelligence, their emotion, what do they do with them? Nothing. So that's the difficulty. Is only devotees can handle that this place is nothing here, because we have a place that's full of rasa, that's eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. So then there's no problem. We can make that bridge. But we just have to remember that when we make that bridge, we go without the mentality of here. That has to be left behind. So mentality here is rasa means I am the enjoyer, right? Rather than I am the enjoyed. That's the difference. When you cross the viraja, you can only cross when it's I am the enjoyed, not the enjoyer. Right? So that's the thing. What is it? This is good or bad based on what? I enjoyed it or I didn't. Right? An activity is considered nice or considered terrible because of my perception, what I'm getting out of it. Right? Not necessarily some other reality, is my reality. You know, it's just like the Shastras say, getting up in the morning, going to Mangal Arati, chanting, doing sadhana, this is good. But for some people, they consider that terrible. You know, they consider that not nice. Because it's, from their perception, that wouldn't be good. So then we have to see as, okay, then how do we distinguish? How do you decide then? Because then it's arbitrary, everybody could make up their own idea what's good and bad. So then there'll be a problem. There'll always, because everybody, living entity is different, there'll always be eternally an argument. So how do you reconcile that argument? Is you have to get a common factor that's common to everybody that everybody can relate to. And so that is only one, that's God. Because everybody has their source in God. So God's the only, is the common principle for everybody. So by that, then the standards God set, then everybody can relate to. You know, we may want to or not, that's the free will, but we could. So then by relating to that, then you have a standard by which then you can decide what's good, what's not good, what's nice, what's not nice, what's to be done, what's not to be done. So then that brings that thing is then in the spiritual world, therefore it's Krishna's standard of what's nice or not nice. So the Hladini potency then addresses that. So we see there, Krishna is not a matter of he gets bored, because everything there is real, everything's eternal. And he is the enjoyer, and there is rasa in exchanging with the other transcendental living entities there. So for him, it's not a matter of boredom, it's a matter of he's unlimited. So that means, and he is not limited in any way. So we're limited. Like, how many things can you taste at once? Or how many things can you do at once? Right? You can do many things, but there is a limit, you know, what you can do. You can't be pushing a lawnmower and cooking lunch. Right? Unless you put the stove on top of the lawnmower, then maybe you could do. But then you wouldn't be able to drive your car. You know, I mean, there is a limit what you can do. At some point, you only have so many hands and so many feet, right? You know, I guess you could have some stoves up and some on the ground, stir some with the feet. But you can only use 1 foot at a time. If you use 2 feet, it might be dangerous, especially if there's a third pot to fall in. Then you would want to watch that carefully. So Krishna doesn't have these problems. So being unlimited, that means his unlimited manifold facets of his personality can all be tasted at once. Right? Therefore, the need for unlimited consorts. Does that make sense? Because otherwise, there's the idea that intimacy is more. Right? That's because we're trying to create focus. But Krishna's already focused. Right? If you have 10 people, then attention is distributed amongst 10. So each person doesn't get that much intensity of reciprocation. You cut it down to 5, then you're getting 20%. You cut it down to 2, you're getting 50%. You cut it down to 1, you get 100%. Right? So the idea is the more intimate means the less people, the more will be my intensity or depth of experience. Right? Because that's what's trying to be achieved, right? Intimacy, you're trying to achieve a depth of experience. That's what you're trying to attain. Right? And a focus. Right? If what you're doing doesn't catch your attention, you'll say it's boring. If it completely gets your attention, then it's considered something very special. Right? So if you can get complete focus in that depth, you know, in that volume, then you consider it very good. Right? Isn't it? So that's why then that intimacy is considered superior. But here Krishna is not limited by that. He's already focused. He can interact with unlimited living entities. Actually, we should make one more point before we go to this point. Is we're looking at it from I am the controller. Therefore, I am the enjoyer. So the more limited the people are, the more I enjoy. Right? Because I don't have the focus. But Krishna, he's the enjoyer. And he's cognizant of everything. Focus means conscious, right? Means someone who's conscious of something then gets the work done. Because they're aware of it. They're focused. Right? So this whole thing of become focused, become this, become one-pointed, become... That's simply all it means is become conscious. Right? And if we say become conscious, then we'll say, well, what does conscious mean? You know? So then we take it in relationship to some work. Okay, if you focus on, you know, making money, means that you're always thinking of making money and everything that you're doing is in connection with making money, that's focused. So then the person interested in economic development goes, oh, got ya. You know? You know, it's someone else and something else. Okay, you're doing administration, your management. It has to be fully everything is seen in relation to what is going to enhance the administration, what's going to remove the obstacles, both now and in the future. Right? Or if it's something to do with the senses, then if you're doing too many things at once or too many things, you can't taste. So you focus, you taste something and get all the aspects of it, then you get something from it. Right? So in other words, all these are used just to get to a higher feature. Of course, the side benefits, they get you dharma, artha, kama, moksha, right? So the materialists are writing many books and making millions of dollars out of this one point, you know? But that's what our movement is for, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Simply become conscious. So that means then you do something. You wash pots. Then, okay, that's dirty there. You didn't wash here. You're not this, that. Where do you put the pot? Where do you wash the pot? Don't get it all over yourself. It's all to become conscious. Right? And if you're conscious, you can put Krishna in there. If you're not conscious, how do you put Krishna there? So Krishna is already focused because he is Sarvajna. He is consciousness. So he doesn't have to become conscious. So he's conscious of everyone. So therefore, unlimited gopis can be interacting with him. He's conscious of each and every one. Therefore, it expands. Right? And then, because of that, then you get that intensity goes beyond what can be attained on the material platform. Right? And for each and every aspect of Krishna's personality, then there's a gopi that brings something of that out. Because they're expanding from Krishna is the complete Godhead, Radharani is the complete energy. So for all of Krishna's moods, Radharani has a mood to match it. But because they're concentrating on one mood or a few moods at a time, but it doesn't mean that everything else should be neglected. Therefore, all the other gopis are there to put in their part. But Radha and Krishna then taste out of all those unlimited qualities which ones they want to concentrate on at this moment. But at the same time, all the others are there. You know, it's just like if you have 100 things, they're all happening at once, but one's prominent. So it creates one flavor. Then when that goes down, the next one comes up. So it's not that it starts and stops. You know, like you're sitting at your house, you're having some fun. Okay, hey, great, this, that. Then, hey, let's get something to eat. You got to get in your car, go to a whole different place, go there, you know, find out the parking lot's full, no place to park, then you go in there, then you get the seat you didn't want, then this and that, then somehow or another you hit it off and you start some atmosphere again, you know, and then, you know, it's a little bit happening and this and that, and okay, then you've eaten, okay, now what do we do? Okay, then you got to go to somewhere. So there's always a stop, start, stop, start, stop, if it starts, but I'm just saying we're looking at a good day, right? Okay, so like that. Then, but for Krishna, it's all happening at once, so it's just a matter of which one you want to focus on. Bring that one out, and then that goes, and another one comes. So it's just a constant flow of rasa. So therefore, Radharani expands. There's so many of her assistants. Otherwise, then there's like, why? Why have to have, why not just, right? But that's because the thing is, understanding rasa means exchange with people. And that intensity, then it goes beyond whatever you can get here. Right? So that means you taste, but as mentioned here, there's no exaltation in rasa. Right? And so then brings here to this that Radha is the one who gives pleasure to Govinda, and she is also the enchantress of Govinda. She's the be-all and end-all of Govinda, and the crest jewel of all his consorts. So here we see is he gives pleasure to Krishna. So that is when she performs the pastimes, he is very happy. She enchants him. She attracts his attention. And she's the be-all and end-all of his be-all and end-all for Krishna. So that means this is need. So we see is the aspect of Sandini Samvit and Ladini, or the Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana, she completely fulfills. Because she's complete, she can attract every aspect of Krishna. She can, in the pastimes, fulfill the desires of every aspect of Krishna. And so there's no mood that Krishna has that she doesn't have. Therefore, she is the complete form of the internal potency. So she is the, here it says, the direct counterpart. Others are not direct. They're reflections, like that. Expansions, like that. Some have the same mood, like that, as mentioned in the, what is it? Yeah, Vaibhav Prakash and Vaibhav Vilas. I don't remember which is which. But it says here, Vaibhav. Goddess is a portion of Vaibhav Vilas. And it means they've expanded and they're different personalities. And the Vaibhav Prakash means they're just expansions of the same personality. Does that make understand? It means like Krishna in the Rasa dance. When he expands and is with all the gopis, it's the same Krishna. Just because each gopi has a slightly different flavor, he tastes a different flavor, so he'll act with them differently. Right? So you could say it's the same form, but slightly different flavor according to the thing. So, but he's tasting them all. But someone like Balaram is a different personality. He tastes differently. So the goddess of fortune tastes differently. They're different personality. But all the gopis, who are all Radharani's expansions, they're basically her, but just different parts of the manifestation. So in other words, Krishna, when he's expanded with this particular gopi in the rasa dance of the unlimited gopis, he's manifested what matches her personality. Does that make sense? Radharani has unlimited aspects. One gopi has, let's say, one of those qualities. Krishna, when he expands, he will expand as the counterpart for that quality. Does that make sense? But he keeps the same form. So when Radharani expands, then they have all those different parts. But they take a slightly different variation to create rasa. Because it's Krishna is the one who's enjoying. Right? So he just has to be himself. Radharani takes all these different forms to create so that they can do all these different aspects. Does that make some sense? So that's why when you get into these things, people get into all weirdo stuff. But there's no need because, you know, Radha and Krishna are one and the same. Right? The energy and the energetic are the same. At the same time is there's difference. And that in that difference is where the rasa is tasted. if she wasn't internally the same as Krishna, you can't taste rasa. Right? Does that make some sense? It means the constitution of one thing that has rasa with another must be the same. You can't have rasa with something that doesn't have a common quality. Does that make sense? Now you can't have rasa with the table. It just doesn't happen. Right? Mm-hmm. Sleep on it. Well, no, that's close, but it's a good philosophy, but still it doesn't quite, how you say. It means there are elements of it that are part of the eternal process, but it doesn't, you know what I'm saying? It means the sleeping for Krishna, that aspect then is an integral part. But then the rasa is actually that you're sleeping for Krishna, so it's still you and Krishna. And the medium then is sleeping. But the table doesn't, especially a table, it's very hard, you know, you have to put a mattress. Maybe you could say you have a rasa with a mattress, but not a table. You know? The table and the rasa, I mean, the mattress and the table, maybe they have a rasa, right? It means the table is the support for the mattress, so has all the masculine qualities and support and the continuity or the, you know, those kind of things, the dependability and all those different things, and that while the mattress has the softness and the malleability and the movement and the all these different things, so might be able to eke something out there, but otherwise, if we go by what we said in the beginning, then maybe not. So then, there has to be a common quality. So whatever Krishna is, Radharani is. Therefore, they're 100%, what was that word? Compatible. She's the perfect counterpart for everything. So therefore, Krishna actually can only have rasa with Radharani. This is the actual point. Now, Krishna expands and Radharani expands. So it's through the expansion only that we can then taste that rasa with Krishna. That's the point. That's why it says she is the devotee. Right? Like that. Yeah. So then, that is the point, is that she is the devotee and everybody else is then assisting. That, so everybody's connection to Krishna is actually through her. Even in Vaikuntha, because she expands into the goddess of fortune. And so, to approach Krishna in the form of Vaikunthapati means you have to go through Lakshmi. Or in Dwarka, then, through the goddesses of fortune. So in any case, one has to go in this way. So that is the... Her worship then consists of fulfilling the desires of Lord Krishna. Therefore the Puranas call her Radhika. Is that she only can fulfill all of Krishna's desires. So if you want to see Krishna fully pleased, then we want to serve Radharani. Like that. If we want to see him only partly pleased, then we can try to directly approach. But if we want to see him fully pleased, then we approach through Radharani. Therefore, Radhan Krishna. Like that. Any questions on this? Or? Oh, yes.
It's described that different devotees have different categories here in the sages of Vedasaranya, Samurai, Liberati.
Means are all the different gopis expansions. See, here is that the verse that was given before. Yeah. I worship Govinda, the primeval lord who resides in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, who resembles his own spiritual figure and who embodies the ecstatic potency Hladini. Their companions are her confidants, who embody extensions of her bodily form and who are imbued and permeated with ever-blissful spiritual rasa. So those who are on that platform, yes, those who are not are trying to get to that platform. So once they get to that platform, then they are. But some may be directly in paternal potency, and so they're direct expansions, and others are then expanded from that internal potency as the jivas and are imbued with that potency. So they're all imbued with her love. But it's just a matter of whether you're, you know, more direct or you know, you're first where you are on the list of expansions. But it doesn't matter because it's non-different. Like that. But no, because they haven't come to that platform yet. They're aspiring. This is talking about those who have attained perfection. They either are eternally perfect or are achieving eternal perfection. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, also in the state of war, is also the Simaris going on about the Narasimha?
Is in the spiritual world is?
Is the festival of
Radha. A festival of Radhastami. There'll be something. Generally, it's not a main tradition for ladies to celebrate birthdays. You know, because there's the element of youth. Right? So every birthday means 1 year less, or 1 year that you're going away from youth. You know, so they're fun up to 16, and then it's downhill from there. Right? You know, and I mean, different traditions are there, but in our dynastic family tradition, birthdays went on till 29, and then from there, then the next year it was also the 29th birthday, and then the next year it was the 29th birthday, and the next year is the 29th birthday. Because 30 is the end of youth. Prabhupada says 16 to 30. 30 is the end of youth. So, therefore, they never get become 30. Like that. You didn't know this fact? Just see. Ignorant of the social customs of the, they say. So, generally that aspect was not there. And also, the modern concept of a birthday is a little different. See, now it's that because the whole idea is to be the enjoyer and the controller, then for one day you're kind of like, you know, you're king for a day. And then after that, everything's back to normal. But the Vedic concept is on that day, you do things, you give in charity, you do service, you do all these other things like that. So generally then they'll do that kind of things. Like on Krishna's birthday, he has to be there because Mother Yashoda is going to give away thousands of cows to the Brahmins and feed the Brahmins, and he has to be there because Krishna is the host. Right? Means you're doing something on their benefit. Does that make sense? Like it's somebody's birthday, so then a whole arrangement is made, you feed so many people. Then, but whoever it's being done for is the host. Even though they may not be capable to handle it themselves, they may be a little kid. Krishna was just a very small boy. But his mother and father would do it on his behalf. But he is actually the host, and so he gets all the benefit. They don't take the benefit themselves. Right? If they're feeding so many Brahmins, they get the benefit. But on this day, they feed all the Brahmins, but the benefit goes to the child. So these kind of things are done. So if they're a little older, then they take part in helping and assisting and serving and all that. So technically, on those days, they would eat last, you know. But then all their intimate friends and, you know, associates then would sit down and feed them really nicely after everybody else is finished. So it'll have that intimacy and that niceness, but it's done at the end, after they've fed everybody and everything's been done, all the duties are taken care of. You know, so kind of like these, so because girls don't become prominent, therefore, even if it is, you won't know about it. Amongst their friends, they'll know, but otherwise, publicly, it won't be known. Because a woman wouldn't come into the public forefront. Why she should be so common? Right? Does that make some sense? So, there is the understanding of this and that it's there. Something is there. There'll be some little thing, but it'll be more intimate. And I'm amongst close friends and relatives. But amongst for Krishna, then it becomes a whole big thing of the whole of Braj gets involved. But because we're her servant, therefore then we're working from that inside. Therefore it becomes a festival. Does that make a difference? Like that. So there's a slight difference in the two. One is you can take it a great personality, therefore, who's transcendental, therefore, that respect. Like that. But if you're taking it to the pastime level, then it's a different thing. It's different. Does that make some sense? Or anything else? Or no? Yes. Yeah.
So how do we understand that? Because oftentimes we see that a person seems to have some sort of rasa with his dog.
With his dog, yeah. A man and his dog, yes. Cat said, "My dear servant, prepare the meal." That's what they said. You want to know, that's what they said. yeah. See, the thing is rasa means is that you are tasting something on the emotional platform. That is, a common flavor between the two. Right? Means, let's say friendship rasa means the two people are at the same time tasting that. They can also taste it separately, but there has to be a moment where they taste it together. Then you can remember that. But there has to be something that was tasted together. You know? The man on the battlefield, there was that tasted that moment of camaraderie with the others, that they were there and he was there, and then he can remember that the rest of his life and tell all the grandchildren and all this and, you know, all these things. But a moment had to be there. So now if you look at it with the animals, then you're not dealing with the emotions, you're dealing with the senses. So the dog likes you because you feed him or you pat him on the head. You know, you scratch him behind the ears or something. So all it is they see this form and then, okay, this is the form that feeds me and does this and that. So they're happy, of course. Who's not going to mind? You know, it's just like, you know, if every day at, you know, exactly 12 noon, this black limousine kind of slowly drove up to your front lawn, the window was partially rolled down, and then suddenly came flying out a roll of banknotes, and then it drove off again. And you'd like seeing that car. You know, hey, here comes the limousine, you know, like that. You know, and the guy in the car goes, hey, yeah, they like us so much. You know, they don't know who's in there, what's happening, this, that. So the dog is just, you know, who knows what the dog's thinking? You know, Prabhupada says when the dog sees the person, he's thinking, such a nice nose. It's the first thing dogs eat on a dead body is the nose. You know, so they're thinking, wow, great nose, yeah. You know, so, you know, they're saying is who knows what they're thinking. So it's not the same. The man may think, yeah, my dog and so loyal and, you know, has all the qualities of, you know, he's loyal, he serves, you know, he's a well-wisher, well-wisher towards my friends, has the same mood as I have, you know, like that, you know, even better than my wife, you know, but there's no rasa. Actually, it's just dogs like to hang out. Dogs have to, because they're like the perfection of shudras. They have to have a master. They have to have a connection of dependency. Otherwise, they're just not happy. Like that. Like a dog will come in. You're in a house. You're in some place. The dog will chase away another dog. The dog doesn't chase away a human that's there. Right? If you're sitting there and it's a new dog around and it just walks in and it sees you there, it'll look around to see if it's an okay place or if they can become part of the scene. They'll never bark and chase you away. Right? But if another dog comes, yes. Because the other dog has not seen a shelter while the human is. So then that they have to seek shelter. Otherwise they're not happy. So that's there. And then from that, then they get their gains and safety. So that's all they're seeing from it. That's why we say is that in the process of non-Vedic, well, even many in religion, you know, that we see, generally it's not actually religion, it's economics. Because we're looking, turning to God for gain and safety. You know, our relation with Him, that's not why we're going to the church and playing. We're going to the temple and praying. We're going because we want to be protected and gain and be protected. So we're looking for a shelter, but rasa's not there. Therefore, the concept is beyond. There it's only doing, well, if I do nice, then things will go nice. If I do bad, then I'll get punished. So there's fear of God. There's not actually love for God. So if you check, in most of the contemporary religions that are going on, there's fear of God, not love of God. They'll say love of God, this and that, but the reason they do good is because God will get angry and they'll go to hell. Why don't you do sin? Oh, we'll go to hell. Not because, oh, God will be displeased. Right? They'll say, oh, you'll go to hell. Right? We'll say, God will be displeased. You know, and the reaction of that is you go to hell. But it's God will be displeased. So it's a whole different level like that. So therefore on this thing is they like it. They like means the horse loves to be brushed, right? You know, it loves somebody to come pat him and to look at him with eyes like they look very beautiful and, you know, say nice things to them, you know. Right? Dogs, you know, sometimes you say something to a dog's face. Horses you always say it to their face, right? So they like that. But it doesn't mean that, you know, you're only special because you're giving it. So this is the difference. This is the modern culture, non-Vedic culture, factually functions on the same level. Therefore, people do not have rasa with each other. They only have rasa with the other senses, or that they provide or protect something. But the actual exchange of rasa basically is not there. Therefore, the whole culture is going neurotic. Because they have to find relationship. They have to find that taste. And they can't find it in the methods that they're looking. Right? You know? Like, just like you want to have a nice relationship with your dog, you don't kick him. You know? If every time you see him, you give him a kick, then you'll probably find it won't work. But the modern culture is you do whatever you like and everybody's got to buy it. And it'll work. Great. You know, I do what I want to do. So where's the rasa? Where's the exchange? It's not there. It doesn't exist. On the central platform, yes. And then by construing it, we can change that, yes. You know, just like we do with the animal, we say the person, the dog loves us, that this. No, they're just attached because we feed them every day. But there's no rasa. So the same thing as, oh, my kid, this and that, you know, mommy, mommy, this and that, and then you get and go away. But where is the rasa? Is there a parental relationship? Is there a conjugal relationship? You know? So that's the thing that has to be seen. So according to the Vedic literature, unless it is founded on a principle given by God, it's not rasa. Not on the emotional platform. On the sensual, yes, but on the emotional, no. So that's the science that is known in the Vedic culture that's not known in the modern culture. Therefore, so many books are written trying to point out. What are they trying to point out? Okay, what? They point out how does a man think, how does a woman think? Why would you want to know that? Because then you know who the person is. Why do you want to know that? Then you know then what's the commonality where you can create interaction. So they're trying by the mechanical ascending method to get to the platform of religious principles. Saying women are like this, men are like that, therefore they can be combined in this way. But religion already describes that. The Shastras already describe that. And higher. So then, because they're going for that, but they still maintain their lower level of sense gratification. I can get what I want out of the women this way, I can get what I want out of the men this way. So they haven't elevated their consciousness to that level of emotion. It's still an essential platform. Does that make sense? Therefore, Prabhupada calls it animal society. Because it is. It's animal society. You know, and it's all different species of animals. The same species can relate. Only. Therefore, you see, if you look around in the street, you have little groups of little species, of tribes, of like that. And one tribe doesn't relate to the other. You know, there's a common language, all, you know, like that, but it's not. Yes, honey.
You mentioned that body and how it relates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It means these, any knowledge can be dovetailed as long as you know how to where to connect it and how. But generally, if it's taken on its own, it will get you nothing, and then your consciousness goes down to their level. Because you have to gain knowledge, you have to be able to think like they're thinking. So then, unless you can take what they're doing and take it to higher, this is Krishnamayi, is that whatever you see, you can connect to Krishna. You see it connects to Krishna. Then it won't bother you. Then it's like, you know, okay, you get some fact here, how to drive the car. Okay, you look in the manual, you drive. But you don't get into, you know, the mood of the guy who drives the car, you know. That's, devotees avoid that. So Prabhupada gives whatever he gives. Everything's there. It's just one has to know the science, how to take it down into, because it starts from up. Spiritual knowledge descends. So its root is up. So then it comes down. And then from there, if you know the sciences, then the detail, then you can bring it down to whatever level into the material energy you want it to come. You know, it's just like you want to extend something, you know, like out, like somebody's here, you know, you take care of them here. Let's say the person's out in the water, you have to extend out into the water. So you have to know the method. How do you extend, you know? So that's the thing, is that the science extends down to whatever level or depth into the material energy you have to go to interact with the people and situations that are there. But it still is connected from the top. So if from here, then you just take something that goes on here, there's no connection. You know, so it's like, okay, you threw the guy the life raft, but where's the rope connecting the life raft to here? Therefore, no extension. So the guy floats off. And then you go out to save him, so you go floating off. But the smart person ties the rope, then throws the lifesaver, then pulls them in. So he extended it out to their level, to what they can understand and grasp, uses their language, and then pulls them in. But if you just get down there and talk their language, then you get distracted. So that's the, yeah, so that's a good point. No, it's a big problem. The devotees have taken... They take Prabhupada's books as simply philosophy, not practical. You know, so therefore they're not able to practically apply them in day-to-day life. So they turn to the karmis for that practical application, and then they get swallowed up by that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to live it. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the thing. Because knowledge is the first platform, then contemplating and practicing is the second. So unless you do that, you won't come to the platform of realization. Then from realization, that platform, then it goes higher. That's where it gets serious. When it becomes our value. And then, okay, so we'll end here. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimati Radharani Abhibhav Titi Maha Mahotsava ki, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premanandi. Don't forget your books. Yeah, and bring again tomorrow. Then I'll start from that one and go into this one. Because otherwise, then I realize I have this much purport today and then so much tomorrow. So I went forward today and then we're going to this tomorrow.